This is the Diehards. The Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome in to another edition of the Diehards. Anthony Pepe flying solo here in Boston, SB Nation Radio. Lots to discuss on the program today. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio or at Diehards Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Pepe. That's Anthony P-E-P-E. We will dive into the latest and greatest NBA trade in this unbelievable, insane, crazy, whatever adjective you want to use offseason. And CP3, Chris Paul going to OKC in return for Russell Westbrook. Reuniting Westbrook and James Harden, and it should be very interesting to see if there's enough balls to go around with those two guys that clearly like to shoot. So we'll do some NBA talk. We'll head up to Toronto and talk about the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard leaving with our expert up there, and we'll do a lot of NBA on the program this morning. Also, we'll do some NFL, and it was interesting reading Rob Gronkowski's Instagram, as he said, someone said, don't be afraid to start over again. This time you're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. So we'll get into that. What does that mean? Does it mean he's coming back? Is he not coming back? We'll talk some NFL on the program here with the Diehards SB Nation Radio. We'll talk about LeBron James, not so fast. He's not switching his number from 23 to 6. Nike came out and said, you can't do that because it's going to cost us millions and there's a production issue and all that stuff. So what does that mean for Anthony Davis and LeBron James and what number they're going to wear? So we'll get into that on the program. We'll talk some Milwaukee Brewers and Milwaukee Bucks. The Brewers coming off a big, fun win last night, 5-4 over the San Francisco Giants. We'll get into that. We'll head out to Denver and talk Denver Broncos and Colorado Rockies. Do a little baseball. And speaking of, we'll talk about the Metropolitans because they are an absolute disaster. Yes, we'll talk New York Mets baseball in the program. And, yep, we're in Beantown, so we have to do some Boston sports.
You're listening to the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And we are back. It is SB Nation Radio. The we is just me, Anthony Pepe, the diehard, hanging out on the Progressive Insurance guest line, joining us right now from Las Vegas. He's trying to survive the heat. Marco D'Angelo, a sports gambler and for 35 years and co-host of Las Vegas Sportsline, ESPN 1100. Hey, Marco, welcome to SB Nation Radio. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, Anthony.
Hey, what's the temperature out there right now?
You don't like July and August out here. We're at 110 today, but they always say it's a dry heat, and you know that I like to punch somebody when they say that because when it's 110, it's like a convection oven. That's still hot.
Hey, Marco, I have so many questions to ask you. Obviously, I'm fascinated with your industry, as many people are. But covering boxing for HBO, Showtime, ESPN over the years, I covered about 80 fights out in Vegas over the last 15 years. I was covering a lot of the Mayweather, De La Hoya, Pacquiao fights. And I'm just curious to get your take on the boxing scene now in Vegas. Has it dipped a little bit?
Oh, there's no question the boxing scene is taking a back seat to the UFC.
Sure.
MMA is the biggest ticket right now as far as the fight game goes in Vegas, and especially at the betting windows. That's where they're getting the most action. Now, of course, when we still had, you know, Mayweather, you know, fighting in town, that was always the biggest ticket. You know, he would fight once or twice a year, and it became an event. He usually fought over Cinco de Mayo
sure.
weekend here in Vegas, and that was always coincided with the first Saturday in May, which obviously is the Kentucky Derby. So it was a fun weekend for Vegas in the heyday of Mayweather. But until we get another, you know, a superstar boxer and the black eye, excuse the pun for boxing, some of the officiating and the scoring on some fights, it's really hurt the sport, and they like UFC much better.
You know, it's funny, you talk about UFC. My boy is the number one commentator for the UFC, John Anik. He was actually an intern of mine here in Boston, and then we were co-workers, and he hosted a show with me, and he's done extremely well as working for Dana White there. And again, I'm not a big MMA guy. I do try to watch it as much as I can. But Marco, talk a little bit about gambling on MMA, because I remember when the sport first came on the scene and my buddy Anik started covering it, he said there's a lot of value for some of these fights, getting plus 300, plus 400 with some of these fighters.
Yeah, you definitely see more of the upsets in MMA than you do in boxing. And, you know, it translates, you know, everybody watches everything that goes on. And then, you know, the big day where you actually see money really start to come in always is on the day of the fight. But when they have the weigh-in and you see guys that have to cut weight, you know, sometimes you look at them in those, you know, weigh-ins. And, you know, if they struggle to lose that weight, it's a situation where you kind of see it a little bit in their bodies, and guys will spot some live underdog plays. Now, in the boxing game, in the difference that you'll see from boxing to MMA, traditionally you've got those big favorites in boxing. I mean, it's not uncommon to have a guy minus 600, minus 700, and the public doesn't want to bet that. I mean, the dog doesn't have a real shot, but they don't want to lay that big number with the price. So what they end up doing, just to have something to root on if they're going to watch the boxing match, you'll see action on game day, on fight day, come to the dog just because people want to put up small money to win big money. And then what ends up happening in the boxing game, right before fight time, you'll see a lot of the sharp bettors in Vegas come in and pound the favorite after the line drops because of all of the novice players making their, you know, $100 bets to have some action and watch the fight and change the odds. In MMA, you can see the action moving back and forth, the couple days moving up to the fight. The people will steam one side, and it's not uncommon to see somebody open up minus 130 and end up closing at minus 210, 220, really moving up, with the value, you know, losing some of the value, but these guys, you know, will play them, and you'll see guys that will open up as dogs and end up being a small favorite just because of the sharp action that pulls in. It's a sport that Vegas, you know, it's new. It's, you know, I mean, I don't want to say it's brand new, but
sure,
it's a niche sport. So they don't have all of the information and data that they do, say, on NFL, NBA games, baseball games. I mean, in the NFL, you know, if a guy stubs his toe, you know about it. You know, if there's things that happen in the fight game that you really sometimes are concealed that only people on the inside know. And John Anik, as you mentioned, we've had him on the radio show here in Vegas, you know, several times. And there isn't a guy that knows more about it than John. And it's great always listening to him. And if he tells you he likes the side, I'm following.
Anik's the best, man. Yes, he is. Hey, man, talk a little bit about, and again, it's Marco D'Angelo, betting for 39 years, co-host of Las Vegas Sportsline. Talk a little about the gambling industry. Obviously, legalized sports gambling is happening in many different states. Hopefully soon here in Massachusetts, where I'm at, it's a short distance now. I can go to Twin River in Rhode Island and bet on a game, which is about 25 minutes from where I'm at. Talk a little bit about how the gambling industry has changed.
Right now, the numbers came out for last month, the gambling numbers for some the different states, and Nevada puts their numbers out. New Jersey actually did more revenue than Nevada last month.
That's
sports
insane.
Wagering. It is, and it's just going to get bigger. Now, you think about it, I mean, Vegas, you know, we're in the middle of the desert. I mean, we've got people coming in here every day, but, you know, now they don't have to come in every, you know, fly here to wager on sports. You've got the different states. My home state was Pittsburgh. I'm from Pittsburgh. You know, they just got sports betting a few months ago, and they just started their phone app. And now when these books have the phone app going, in places like New Jersey and Pennsylvania, because where the casinos are right now in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, my home casino is in downtown Pittsburgh. If you want to bet on a daily basis, that's a pain to drive down to Pittsburgh, rush hour, all of that stuff. But if you have the phone app, you're sitting on your couch. I'm here in Vegas on the weekends, guys. I got Sunday ticket. I'm watching games. I don't have to leave my couch. I've got on my phone 7 or 8 different casinos sports app on my phone, so I can shop for the best line. We can play in-game, whatever, and that's just changing the market. And in-game is what's becoming even more popular to the guys that are seasoned bettors. Now, obviously, new bettors coming to the sport, they're still learning everything. They're just learning, what a parlay is, what a teaser is, what a straight bet is. In the introduction of in-game wagering, where you can keep making wagers throughout the whole game and the line's changing, after every play, field position, whatever, every basket made, you can pick up value. Maybe you wanted in a game you were looking at taking the Lakers -5, okay? But you got to the party late. They were laying 6.5 at game time, and you didn't want to lay the inflated number. But you wait till the game starts, and maybe 4 or 5 minutes into the game, Lakers start out a little bit slow, and they're down 3 points, and all of a sudden the in-game adjusted line from -6.5 that the game started is now at 5 or 4.5. And you can jump in if you still feel you like the Lakers, you're watching the game, and you can get that better number. And a lot of times you can find hedges where the best thing is if a game's going back and forth, you could live bet the game and actually get plus points on both sides. Sometimes when a game's going back and forth, one team's up 5, then they're down 5, back and forth, trade and lead, that's a great time to live wager.
There he is, Marco D'Angelo, betting sports for 39 years. And if you can do that for 39 years, you know this dude knows something. It's wagertalk.com. You're listening to the Diehards here on SB Nation Radio.
The Diehards continue now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And we are back. It is SB Nation Radio. Anthony Pepe, the Diehard, flying solo. We will go right back to the Progressive Insurance guest line, sponsored by Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. He's host and producer at IMG, sports anchor reporter. Bobby Krivitsky is on the line. Bobby, welcome to SB Nation Radio. How you doing, pal?
Thanks for having me on, Anthony. How you doing tonight?
I'm hanging in there, man. I just don't want to talk a little NFL with you, and I hope that's all right. I'm going to steal my first question from ESPN, so don't tell anybody. But I saw it on ESPN.com. I think it was on one of the shows. Is Patrick Mahomes at 23 or Brady at 41 more impressive? What do you think?
Wow, that is a great question.
Sure is.
I didn't read the article, but I did see that. I think you blew the idea that this is a secret between me and your audience. But as far as which one is more impressive, I'm going to go Brady at 41 because we've seen more and more NFL quarterbacks come up and have success right off the bat, especially their first year as a starter. So Mahomes wasn't a rookie to the NFL last season, but it was his first year as the starting signal caller for the Chiefs. And so there's a precedent for quarterbacks coming in and having a lot of success, but there is not much precedent for quarterbacks being MVPs and MVP candidates and winning Super Bowls in their 40s.
It is remarkable, and it is a tough question. I mean, both answers are correct. But again, back in the day, and I'm dating myself, I'm a lot older than you, Bobby, but back in the day when a QB came in, he was riding the pot 2-4 right. years before he even sniffed it. And it is remarkable nowadays that you do have these QBs coming in and being the QB1 and the success that they have had. But I mean, Patrick Mahomes clearly off the charts, but the Kansas City Chiefs saw something there, and that's why they plucked him away and traded away their starter. But what Brady's doing at 41 is also remarkable. And again, he will probably be competing, if not winning another Super Bowl next year. It's pretty unbelievable. Tom Brady throwing to Rob Gronkowski at UCLA. I know it's a lot of talk, and what is Gronk doing? Gronk on his Instagram put up a post that said, someone said, don't be afraid to start over again. This time you're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. What do you make out of that? And do you see Gronk coming back in a Patriots uniform?
So my thought is guided by a belief that he's not coming back.
Okay.
But my interpretation of that quote is Gronkowski talking about the next chapter in his life.
All right.
NFL and the experience that he's gone through life to get to this point, and the base that he's built up to set himself up to have success and at least pursue so many different avenues, from acting to, look, if he wants to be the XFL commissioner, that's an easy opportunity that I'm sure he could have. You know, commercials, being an NFL analyst, I don't know how good he'd be, but I'm sure he'd get paid a lot of money to try it out. So there are plenty of options for Rob Gronkowski to pursue now, and I understand the love of the game, and this is what he's done his whole life up to this point, but I don't really know what the incentive would be for him to come back and play, because he's won Super Bowls, he's built a Hall of Fame pedigree playing in the NFL, and he has a ton of money, and he can make a ton of money without putting his body on the line. So I'm just not sure, outside of love of the game, if there's an incentive, and I don't think that tug is going to be strong enough to bring him back.
Yeah, Bobby, I disagree. I think he's definitely coming back. Again, this guy played football his whole life. It's all he knows. I know he wants to do those other things, and you mentioned acting and WWE and maybe a role in the XFL when Vince McMahon launches the second version of the XFL next February. I don't know. To me, Rob Gronkowski annoys me off the football field, all the other stuff he does. But on the field, clearly, as a football fan, he's pure entertainment. We love, you know, watching him play. One of the best, if not the best, tight end ever to play the game. And I just think he was tired of getting beat up and having all the injuries. I just think he wants to, you know, maybe come in week 10, week 11, you know, and not go through the training camps and not do all that stuff. And I think the Patriots will welcome him with open arms. Who wouldn't? But we'll see what happens later on in that chapter. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Gronk and the New England Patriots. Another player that is a little disgruntled, the LA Chargers running back Melvin Gordon, is the latest athlete, Bobby, to demand a trade if there's not a new contract. Are you smelling him being traded to the Buffalo Bills?
Ooh, that's interesting. I haven't looked into rumors and possible destinations for where Melvin Gordon might end up. I have a feeling, my instinct is that he's ultimately going to work out a deal to stay with the Chargers. However, I'm with the masses that you don't pay a running back, especially one
sure.
who's not in the top tier, like a Todd Gurley, for example, like a Saquon Barkley. You don't pay a running back of Melvin Gordon's status big money and tie yourself up, especially the Chargers have so many important players coming up in free agency soon, like Bosa and Keenan Allen. So Melvin Gordon is a player who last year had less rushing yards than Marlon Mack and one more rushing touchdown than Chris Carson. And on top of that, Anthony Lynn, their head coach, is a former NFL running back. He made his bones in the coaching game as a longtime running backs coach. And they have two solid running backs in Austin Ekeler and Justin Jackson on the roster. So for as much points to them not having to pay Melvin Gordon, I also think they're tied to the reality that Phillip Rivers is going to turn 38 years old in December. And so they might choose the certainty of just working out a deal with Melvin Gordon, whose agent has already let it be known that he's not looking to be the highest paid running back, that he'll take what he deems a fair deal in that, you know, upper middle tier of running back, as opposed to setting a new standard for the position. So ultimately, I do think the two sides come to a deal.
I'm just so sick of hearing these athletes demanding trades if they don't get a new contract. And I was making a joke about, you know, that when the NFL players do it, they're just going to get traded to Buffalo and be stuck with being a Buffalo Bill. But who knows? Again, it's every day you see another player demand he's unhappy and wants more money and wants a trade. I'm so sick and tired of it. But a fun story to look at, and a lot of people are excited about the Cleveland Browns this year, Bobby. One of my co-hosts here on the Diehards, John Serenitas, thinks they are the second best team in the AFC behind the New England Patriots. You buying that?
I think it's certainly possible. There's I hate to give such a stickler answer here, and there's no fun answer, but there's no way to know right now.
Of course.
It's a combustible situation. It's an exciting situation. They could prove to be even better than the Patriots. They have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. They don't have the experience, but they are. There's a lot of talent, and it's an impressive roster on paper. We just have to see how it all plays out. But I'm a huge believer in Baker Mayfield. Odell Beckham, one of the best at his position. I could name more guys on offense, but to show you the balance they have a pretty solid backbone on defense as well between Myles Garrett and Christian Kirksey and Denzel Ward, a very good up-and-coming cornerback from Ohio State, fourth overall pick in the draft 2 years ago. So this is a very well-built Cleveland Browns team. It's just a question of whether or not they can actually put it together on the field.
Expectations for San Francisco 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo.
I'm a huge believer in Jimmy Garoppolo, and as long as he can stay healthy, that seems to be the big knock on his NFL career so far, because even that game when he was with the Patriots and he was slicing up the Miami Dolphins, he couldn't make it through. And so as long as he can stay on the field, I don't view the Niners as a Super Bowl contender, but I definitely view them as a team that will be competing for a playoff spot.
Team I don't think is going to be competing for a playoff spot are the New York Jets. Adam Gase, is he over his head here as the coach and doing some GM duties?
Well, he doesn't really have to do the GM duties because they've brought in Joe Douglas, who's highly regarded most recently from the Eagles.
Okay.
And had a huge part of building that team up into one of the best rosters in the NFL. So if he had to handle both, and look, the offseason's pretty much over anyway.
And he was doing that when he first got in there, so it's just kind of an odd situation was my point.
Well, he was doing it. I don't even know how much he was doing. It was only for a short term. The draft, free agency, all that was over by the time that he took over in the front office, and it was really just to deal with the search, and they had their guy who they wanted in Joe Douglas. He rebuffed them a few times, and finally they just made such a strong offer that he couldn't turn it down. And so now he's there. He has a good relationship with Adam Gase, which always bodes well. Doesn't mean it'll turn out successfully, but it's certainly a good starting point for those two. And the Jets, they have a lot of young talent as well. Do I think that they'll be a contender for anything more than a playoff spot? Probably not, even if everything goes well. But I'm a believer in Sam Darnold, and they've got some good talent on defense led by Jamal Adams. So they made some signings this year. Le'Veon Bell, regardless of what you think about paying running backs, is one of the best at his position, at least when we last saw him. C.J. Mosley, again, in my opinion, overpaid, but still a pretty good player to add to the Jets. So I don't think that they're going to be in the bottom tier of the league by any means.
Hey, you buying or selling how good the Colts are?
You know, it was interesting because they came into the offseason with a ton of cap space and really didn't make any big splashes. So I'm curious to see how they follow up last season where they overachieved. And now this year, the roster isn't dramatically different like we envisioned it might be coming into the offseason with all that money to play with. So it might be more of the same for them. And then if enough teams make a jump, then it's possible that they're on the outside looking in when the playoffs start.
Hey Bobby, final 30 seconds here. You get a Super Bowl matchup. Again, I know many things can happen, but right now, if you had to predict who's playing in the Super Bowl.
I think you're going to like this one. I'm going with a rematch from 2 years ago, Patriots-Eagles.
All right, there he is, Bobby Krivitsky joining us here. You're listening to the Diehards. Anthony Pepe flying solo here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back. It is SB Nation Radio. You have the Diehard, Anthony Pepe. We will jump right back to the Progressive Insurance Guest Line, sponsored by Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Senior writer for Fangraphs ESPN, Dan Zimborski, is on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to SB Nation Radio. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well tonight. How are you, Anthony?
I'm doing all right, man. And before we get into all this stuff about Fangraphs, I'm curious to get your take. I mean, obviously the most heartbreaking and tough story of the Major League Baseball season, Tyler Skaggs passes away with the Angels. And then on the flip side, one of the most remarkable stories is they're honoring him and they pitch a no-hitter. How unbelievable was that from a baseball fan standpoint?
Yeah, that's one of those things that if you saw in a movie, you'd say, oh, that wouldn't happen that way in real life. But it did, so it was cool to see. It was an emotional night for the Angels. I mean, losing your teammates so suddenly like that, there's no way for anyone to really, you know, come to terms with that very quickly. I thought it was a great night. It's a bittersweet moment, but it was a nice tribute to Skaggs.
It was awesome, and again, as a baseball fan, you know, it's again a very sad story. But then you look at a positive, and if you can take a positive out of something like that, and you look at what that does for the healing of the team and the fans and the community and the family of Tyler Skaggs, it's just an awesome story that we'll be talking about from years to come. But Dan, talk a little bit about Fangraphs and what is Fangraphs all about?
Well, Fangraphs has been publishing data and articles for, I believe, 12 years now.
Okay.
A lot of people have come through Fangraphs, like Dave Cameron of the Padres, August Fagerstrom of the Indians, Eno Saris with the Athletic. It has elements of both being a think tank in some senses, and in another sense, it's an independent journalism outlet, let's just say. I've been working for them full time since last year. I left ESPN full time to join them. So I definitely believe in the mission statement. And we always try to stay on the cutting edge of data that we provide. And there's a lot more coming. And if you follow stats in baseball, hopefully you've been to Fangraphs and Baseball Reference also at some point. Don't want to forget about them.
Yeah, no, Dan. Again, it's a baseball fan my whole life, and you know the key stats are batting average and home runs and RBIs, and it is RBIs, right? It's not RBI.
Yeah, it's RBIs. It's a plural, and from my manual of style, plural of an abbreviation or an acronym has an S at the end.
There you
so
go.
Don't put up with any RBI. It's that's wrong, and it's like calling a hot dog a sandwich.
And exactly. And again, you know, back in the day when we started fantasy sports, we looked at the basic numbers and what they are. But the numbers have changed over the years. And now when you're evaluating a player or you're looking at a player, you're looking at a lot more stats. What are some key stats that people should be looking at that maybe aren't?
Well, it depends, of course, how deep you are through the looking glass, let's just say. Once you get beyond batting average, home runs, and RBIs, you get into the very basic OPS. And that's one of the older of the so-called sabermetric stats. And that comes from Branch Rickey and Alan Roth in the 50s, the work they did while Branch was with the Pirates. So OPS is kind of a lot of the entry point in the sabermetrics for a lot of people. And once you go there, it really depends on what question you're trying to answer. If you're answering very generalized questions like, is X player better than Y player, then there are, as I said, very generalized stats like wins above replacement. And really, anytime there's a question, there's now a bit of data to look at. There's numbers like speed score, which was Bill James's measure. It's just trying to get an estimate of a player's speed based on different baseball events. And now, of course, you have StatCast, where you can actually get the sprint speed of a player, which was something that wasn't available 20 years ago. So even MLB is pretty much all in on just the data revolution in baseball. And there's, of course, you know, there's other numbers that have been around for a little while longer, but are still good summary items. OPS Plus, which is a park-adjusted and league-neutral stat. ERA Plus, similarly. You see variants of them both at Fangraphs and Baseball Reference, and they're widely used. But really, sabermetrics isn't really a statistics thing.
the basic definition of sabermetrics is objective knowledge about baseball, and that can have a lot of forms. The data that we provide, data that other people provide and collect and analyze, that's just one approach, and the whole goal is essentially to answer questions.
We're talking to Dan Zimborski, senior writer for Fangraphs, formerly of ESPN. And, Dan, you mentioned Bill James. Obviously, I'm from Boston, so we're very familiar with this dude. But what kind of guy is he? Is he an odd duck?
Well, they say that all of us are kind of odd ducks in some way. You see a lot of the sabermetricians have rather unusual career paths. Bill worked as a night watchman when he was developing his stats.
Okay.
Rob Nyer, before he joined ESPN, he skipped college and was working as a roofer when he signed with Bill James as his research assistant. And Rob built his career from there. Vorish McCracken, who developed kind of the theory behind batting average and balls in play, he was a paralegal who was working as a bike courier when he developed some of his fielding independent pitching theories and then went straight to work for the Red Sox and also European soccer teams. So you have a lot of different career paths, and they say we're all odd. I never envisioned becoming a baseball writer. I majored in mathematics in college. I expected, you know, to be working for a banker or a, you know, investment bank in some manner. But instead, I'm writing about baseball for a living because I did some things in the 90s, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden, Weird Dan is employable, which is kind of odd still.
Hey, how are some of these teams using these stats? I mean, we know they've been using them for years, but can you get into specifics on when a player is being evaluated to, for example, to be drafted or possibly be traded at the trade deadline? How are some of these teams using these stats?
Well, teams are going these days for a very all-of-the-above buffet approach,
okay,
where every bit of information they have a player, whether it's statistical or whether it's scouting, is collated, put in a database, and analyzed. There's a lot more they can do with game tape these days. I mean, you don't look at tapes anymore. You can sum things up to the second and get the spin rate on balls. And these kinds of things are very useful to teams. The big approach now isn't what. 20 years ago, when these things, these concepts were new to baseball, on base percentage and slugging percentage were kind of arcane in a way. They were kind of old hat for the stats guys at that point. But by the 90s, teams were still kind of behind the sabermetric community. But as you get towards the turn of the millennium and Moneyball, and as teams start taking that approach, now teams are trying to get in the cutting edge. So you see a lot of circulation between analysts and baseball teams. They go into baseball, they come out of baseball, and teams are now looking for people who can provide scouting information that also understand sabermetric approaches. So a lot of scouting writers have also been hired by teams. So it's really an all-in approach, and teams are very advanced these days. They don't always share things with me what they're doing, but every team has a slightly different approach. And the thing is, even teams we talk about today that we don't really think of as stat-head teams like the Royals or the Marlins, even they have analytics departments that would just make anything 25 years ago just pale in comparison. So that's really where the sport is today.
Do you still have old curmudgeons that don't believe in any of that stuff? And they say, I just want a dirt dog. I want a gritty guy, and I know what I know. I know what I know, and these stats mean nothing.
Yeah, it happens, but I expect that in 40 years, when I'm 80, I'll be equally curmudgeonly about something. I'll be complaining about the robot players and those cyborgs. I hope. That'll be fun.
Hey, are there any teams out there that just dismiss these altogether?
Altogether, no. There's some teams, of course, that take it more into consideration than others.
Of course.
Teams like the Dodgers and Astros, those teams are all in, and there's a lot of teams like that. I would personally say that the teams like the Royals don't really go all in. You see a lot of their approach in the major league level doesn't really feel like they're using all the data because the data did not say to sign Ian Kennedy. The Padres, the data did not say to sign Eric Hosmer and things like that. But teams have a vested interest in, you know, improving and being better. And as time goes on, teams like that will still become more and more advanced. We've seen some of the teams that we thought were kind of behind at times, like the Orioles, have also taken big steps up with their change in personnel, because everybody wants to be part of, you know, where baseball is today.
Dan, we're hearing a lot about the baseball today and the season that MLBers are having with the record home runs. People are questioning whether or not the ball is juiced. It was a big conversation, obviously, during the All-Star break. And then we kept hearing about, arm angle and angle velocity and all these different things, the way the pitchers are throwing the balls. Your overall take on what's happening there?
Well, I think the ball is clearly juiced, simply because there's a few factors that are really hard to dismiss. One, several analysts have actually dissected the ball. Most recently, an astrophysicist named Meredith Wills did a long piece for The Athletic that you should definitely check out if you haven't, where she analyzed every aspect of the ball and how it would increase distance based on previous balls that were used in the majors. And the other thing is that this year, the AAA leagues, the International League, the Pacific Coast League, they changed to using the MLB ball. Mm-hmm. And the home run rate in those leagues, let's just say they actually have already hit as many home runs in those leagues through mid-July as they did in all of last year. And none of the lower minor leagues had the same increase in home runs because they did not take on that baseball. So while generally the long-term trend has been to more power, as we do talk about exit velocity and launch angle and different approaches, the ball has to play a large part in that.
Did you enjoy the All-Star game on Tuesday night?
I always enjoy All-Star week. It's a lot of fun. The Futures game might be my favorite one.
Okay.
But this was a really good home run derby this year. I know people were grumping about Vladimir Guerrero being in the All-Star game because he didn't have enough home runs. But the All-Star game, the home run derby isn't really like a meritorious event. It's fun. And it's fun to see a player like Vlad, who's probably going to be a large part of the future of the sport, and him getting that national spotlight. And he did his best there. I mean, he almost took it, but Pete Alonso just by that small of a margin.
Is the All-Star game, though, a little bit different than, again, I hate to be that guy, you know, back in the day, but, you know, here in Boston in 1999, the All-Star game was one for the ages. Obviously, you had Ted Williams and you had everything that went on there and the celebration. But, you know, going up and down that roster, and I heard someone talking the other day about that 1999 All-Star game at Fenway Park and going up and down the American League and the National League, and they were all Hall of Famers on that. A majority of those players were Hall of Famers. And you go up and down this roster now and you kind of like, who's that guy? What's this guy doing? Who does he play for? How has it changed in your eyes?
Well, it's very hard to be completely objective about this because I think back about the Bo Jackson game, which was in 1989.
Okay.
I was 11, and I still remember that All-Star game better than any All-Star game that's happened in the last 10 years. But I don't really know if it's because I was 11 and, you know, I was more innocent, and now I'm jaded and old. I don't know if I just perceive baseball games in a different way when I cover it professionally than I did when I was a wide-eyed little kid. To me, it's not as exciting as it used to be because we have interleague play every day. Players go from league to league very easily. No one ever talks about an AL player or an NL player anymore. You don't really see a lot of matchups that you don't normally see. So it's become more of an exhibition than just a fun exhibition. It's something that's like an exciting, ultra-competitive All-Star game like I remember. But again, I might be having rose-colored memories because that's always something you have to worry about because nothing gets those nice sepia tones like the past.
Hey, Dan, appreciate you taking the time. Dan Zimborski, the senior writer for Fangraphs, formerly of ESPN, and great stuff and very interesting stuff. You definitely need to check it out. Appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you later on down the line. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You're listening to The Diehards here on SB Nation Radio.
You're locked in to The Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And you're listening to The Diehards here on SB Nation Radio. My name is Anthony Pepe. You can follow me on Twitter, at Anthony Pepe. That's at Anthony, P-E-P-E. Follow us at SB Nation Radio or follow the show at Diehards Radio. I want to tell you about besthotelrates.com. Let's talk travel. Yep, most of us do a little travel throughout the year. How are you booking your hotel rooms? Well, I've got a suggestion for you. BestHotelRates.com. BestHotelRates.com has negotiated special rates with over 600,000 hotels worldwide and extended those discounts to you. Simply go to BestHotelRates.com, plug in your destination, dates of travel, and voila. Yep, boom! You're looking at discounted rates for many of the hotels that you could pay more for somewhere else. Save your money. Book your hotels through BestHotelRates.com. Top-notch customer service backs up your reservation, so your stay is safe and secure. BestHotelRates.com. Start planning your next trip today. It's in the name, BestHotelRates.com. Someone that may need a hotel as they're coming to Boston and looking for a place to live is the new Red Sox, Andrew Cashner, traded from Baltimore. Sox have traded for the right-hander, 32-year-old. Pretty impressive record this year, 9-3, 3.83 ERA in 17 starts, but his last five starts, he has a 1.41 earned run average. And Nathan Eovaldi will be coming back and be going to the bullpen. So the Red Sox looking for a starter. They trade for one, and obviously they need some bullpen help. But bring in Andrew Cashner from Baltimore for a couple of minor leaguers, Elio Prado and Noel Berth Romero. He's going to start Tuesday against Toronto. Eight and a half back are the Red Sox, and they play 21 in a row starting Monday in the division. So 21 in a row, they can make up some ground. I think this dude's going to help the Red Sox, the right-hander. Again, 9-3, 3.83 ERA this year. Red Sox fans hope in his 10 years.